are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the CommBank Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a senior economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by our Head of Australian Economics, Gareth Aird. Thanks for joining, Gareth.
Good to have a chat again, Belinda.
It is. Now, one of the really interesting things that we've been noticing is just the lift in household income that we're seeing in our own CBA data. Now, this is actually really important because one of the focuses during the COVID-19 economic crisis has been the downturn in employment. What often gets missed, though, is the lift that we're seeing in income through government payments. Now, you've been watching this quite closely. What's the latest that you're seeing?
Yeah, look, there's a really interesting dynamic going on at the moment in terms of household income, and we're able to track that by looking at payments going into CBA bank accounts. And the data that we're looking at is really, really timely. And the most recent data, which we published on this morning, was up to the 22nd of May. And what we're watching is dollars that are paid into CBA bank accounts as wages and salaries, and then also money that's going into CBA bank accounts in the form of government benefit payments. And if we add those together, we get a partial read on household income, which is a pretty good proxy for what's happening overall in terms of household income. And what the data tells us is that the lost wages and salaries through lower employment has been more than offset by an increase in government benefit payments. And the big driver there of the increase in government benefit payments is the number of people that are on JobSeeker and the doubling of JobSeeker. That's seen an incredible lift in income on that front. And then also we had earlier in the year $750 one-off payments going to households. And so from our vantage point, Q2 looks like we could see a positive result for household income, and that runs totally contrary to what the spending data is telling us. But the reality is that the government has been able to plug the income gap by delivering payments to the household sector. They haven't all been spent, obviously, because a lot of the economy has been shut down. And so when we're thinking about the economy now in the third quarter of the year, we think there's some upside risk now on consumption, just given the huge amount of income that's being paid to the household sector.
Now, this runs a little bit contrary to some of the forecasts that we've seen by the Reserve Bank of Australia. They did actually have household disposable income fall in Q2. Where can we kind of plug the gap here? Like, is it just maybe they weren't aware of just the sheer support that was being provided by the federal government? Is that kind of what you're thinking? Or do they think that maybe the labour market was going to perform a little bit worse than what had been anticipated?
Look, it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, we don't know exactly the process that they went through to come up with their numbers. And look, if I ran our numbers and didn't put in any government benefit payments, then we'd see this big contraction on household income over the second quarter of the year. But, you know, as I mentioned, those government payments are huge. The fiscal stimulus is incredible, and it really is plugging that gap in household income. But on the wages and salaries side, I think that wages and salaries paid hasn't fallen by as much as you might have thought, just having a look at the shock to jobs. And the reason for that is that we've lost a disproportionate number of lower paid jobs and casual jobs that are less hours. So what you get there is a contraction in income that is less than the fall in employment. So I think on the wages and salary side, that probably hasn't come out as bad as it might have otherwise. Maybe the central bank was thinking that it would look a little bit worse there. But look, we know where we are today based on our data, and that's really telling us that over both the second quarter of the year and then the third quarter, household income should be quite well cushioned by the fiscal stimulus. And I think the bigger concern now is around what happens in late September, October, when at the moment these job seekers is expected to go back to where it was pre-COVID, and then also JobKeeper winds down. I think that's now the dynamic that's important to focus on rather than what's actually happening this quarter, because we know that story is pretty much locked in.
And I guess that raises the question of, we know the government's estimates of the cost of JobKeeper have been dramatically reduced from $130 billion to just $70 billion. So in reality, the government does have a little bit more money up its sleeve to make some changes. What do you think they will do? And kind of when we think about how that income in the economy will kind of slow quite sharply in late September and early October, you know, what are some suggestions and maybe how they could cushion that blow to the income side of the economy?
It's a really interesting question. The news that we got last week around JobKeeper expected to be going to 3.5 million people rather than 6.5 million people was fundamentally good news, because what it means is that the cost of the program, as you say, is now expected to be $60 billion less. Now, even though the government doesn't have that money per se, that's borrowed money, they had been expecting to obviously run a deficit that incorporated an extra $60 billion than what they'll be doing now. So it does mean that there is more wriggle room on the fiscal front, and it does mean that if they want to sort of take a taper type approach to reducing the payments to the household sector, there's certainly scope to do that. And you know, you would think that come September, October, there's still going to be a lot of people who are on Job Seeker. I mean, that's our expectation. The unemployment rate will still be pretty high then. And that means you've got a real hit to household income if a lot of those people suddenly see their income halved. So you'd think that we might hear something on that front. There's other options they could do around JobKeeper as well. I mean, we'd just be speculating, but I think the point is, or two things really. One is that the shock to income come September, October will be less than previously thought, because there's less people actually on JobKeeper. And secondly, the fact that the government won't have spent that extra $60 billion over that period means there's a little bit more wriggle room in terms of what they can do to cushion that transition, if you like, from government support back to income that's generated from the private sector.
I mean, we have to remember that, I mean, this is all borrowed money, so that is going to have a consequence further down the line. I mean, the budget deficit numbers that we're estimating are pretty large, and the lifting government debt's pretty large as well. I guess we need to think about the consequence to them spending that additional money as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's exactly right. I mean, the fiscal stimulus is borrowed money, and the intention there is to support the economy through this period, but then we need to be on a march towards full employment as fast as we can. We need to get people earning wages and salaries that are paid by the private sector, not underwritten by the government, because in the long run, living standards, any increase in living standards comes off production, not debt funded transfer payments. So you know, it's very important to support the household sector in the short run, but it's clearly not a long-term solution in terms of, you know, living standards in the economy and what the government's trying to do, which is get the economy back as quickly as it can to resembling something as close to what it looked like pre-COVID, which will be a very difficult task.
It will. Now, we did hear from the Governor of the Reserve Bank of Australia on the 28th of May. So he was kind of alluding to the fact that the economy wasn't tracking worse than their base case scenario and could have actually been tracking a little bit better than their base case scenario. Now, our base case scenario here at CBA was quite similar to what the Reserve Bank's thinking. When we're looking at the data now, how do we think the economy's tracking? And mind you, we get some pretty powerful insights from the use of our CBA card spend data. What's your view of how the economy's tracking as kind of we enter the final quarter of Q2?
Yeah, look, we've got to sort of remember that things are still very, very poor. We're just sort of talking about them relative to what we thought they might have been sort of 4-6 weeks ago. And I think on that front, the news has been, generally speaking, better than expected across the board. I mean, the starting point is around what's happening with the virus. And I think, you know, 6 weeks ago, wasn't a central scenario to think we are where we are right now with the virus, where we can talk about opening the economy up a lot sooner than expected. And if the economy can open up earlier than expected, then the growth outlook will be better than was previously thought. I mean, on the labour market itself, we've held a view that the whole time that the unemployment rate is not going to get that 10% mark that both the government and the Reserve Bank expect. And so on that front, we've been quite encouraged with the recent new data out on the labour market, which suggests we're not going to see that double-digit unemployment rate. But there's still a lot of risk to the outlook, and there's still, you know, headwinds that are going to be with us, I'd suggest, right through certainly this year and well into next year, and that's around overseas tourism, around net overseas migration. So that'll have flow-on impacts to the residential construction sector, the tourism sector. So there's still a lot of things that will be with us that, you know, are going to make it very, very hard to get back to the kind of levels we were pre-COVID. But I think we've been quite encouraged, you know, even on our spending data, which we're tracking every week and that we're reporting on. I mean, that has picked up remarkably well over the past few weeks. And normally when you have a recession or a big downturn, you don't get such a snapback in spending. We've seen, you know, big changes in the space of 3 or 4 weeks. And what I think there we're seeing is that, you know, the incredible support that's come through via the government, the buffer, the household sector on the income side, means that as the economy opens up, there's money there that can be spent. And if people are going out spending money, that'll support employment, that supports production, and therefore you can actually get a reasonably good handover that you don't normally see in other recessions. So that's what Phil Lowe was effectively getting at yesterday, was saying, look, they put out a couple of scenarios in the central case, and from where we were, you know, a few weeks ago, things probably look a little bit better than we might have thought otherwise.
And I think the key to this, of course, is behaviour. One of the things we're watching quite closely is if household behaviours change, if they have the confidence to go out there and mingle in community without fear of catching that virus as well. So monitoring a lot of those, spending on services, getting out and about, recreation items, dining out, will be quite important to see just how much household behaviour is changed. Appreciate your insights as always, Gareth.
It's a pleasure, Belinda. It's good to chat.
Where CBA data is cited, this refers to the bank proprietary data. As the statistics take into account only the bank's data, it may not reflect all trends in the market. All customer data used or represented is anonymised and aggregated before analysis and is used and disclosed in accordance with the group's privacy policy statement. Now, the report that we've been talking about today was published on the 29th of May by Gareth Aird and can be found on combankresearch.com.au.